Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The effort to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy has resumed after an Anchorage Superior Court judge yesterday took back a stay order that had briefly paused the campaign. Alaska Public Media reports that Judge Eric Arseth says he issued the stay accidentally but hasn't explained exactly what happened. For now, Arseth's latest ruling allows the recall group to proceed to signature gathering, but Dunleavy's supporters have threatened to appeal an earlier Arseth decision that found the petition language includes legal grounds for recall, and they are seeking a stay on signature gathering. A federal civil suit filed against the city of Fairbanks by the Fairbanks Four is back in play. Yesterday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned a district court judge's dismissal of the case. The native men known as the Fairbanks Four, George Freese, Kevin Pease, Marvin Roberts, and Eugene Vent, sued the city for malicious prosecution and withholding evidence, actions they say led to their wrongful conviction of a 1997 murder. The convictions were subsequently vacated under a 2015 prison release agreement with the state, a deal precipitated by new evidence showing others were likely responsible for the beating death of 15-year-old John Hartman. The men's ability to sue the city for damages hinges in large part on whether vacation of convictions meets a legal standard of invalidation. Fairbanks IV attorney Mike Kramer says Wednesday's Ninth Circuit Court majority opinion equates the two.
The invalidation by a state court was met here when the judge vacated the conviction.
Kramer points to a legal dictionary definition referenced in the ruling.
Which is the fancy word that, you know, the court process was described at, where they vacated the convictions. Vacator means to invalidate.
We respectfully think the judges got it wrong.
City of Fairbanks attorney Matt Singer cites the dissenting opinion of one of the three Ninth Circuit judges who maintained that vacation of the Fairbanks IV convictions under the 2015 agreement with the state falls short of a Supreme Court precedent.
A settlement is not a valid favorable termination under the rule that the Supreme Court established in a case called Heck versus Humphrey.
Singer says the city may appeal up to the U.S. Supreme Court on that point. Meanwhile, another major case issue was remanded back by the Ninth Circuit justices to federal district court. It involves whether the Fairbanks Four can even sue the city after agreeing not to seek damages under the 2015 deal with the state. Alaska Supreme Court justices have expressed skepticism over the state's broad power to regulate the speech of Alaska Native Corporation shareholders. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the justices heard an ACLU challenge of state sanctioning of a gnome man for a letter to the editor published in a local newspaper.
The letter to the editor penned in 2017 didn't say who shareholders should vote for. Rather, it addressed how they should vote. But the state stepped in anyway, arguing that Austin Amasuk should have first registered his statement with financial regulators.
Mr. Amasuk was fined and is in front of this court because he failed to send the letter to the division on the same day that he sent it to the newspaper and because he failed to fill out the disclosure form.
That's Amasuk's lawyer, Susan Olansky, in front of the state Supreme Court on Wednesday. First, some background. Alaska Native corporations were created by an act of Congress nearly 50 years ago as part of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. But the federal government left it up to the state to regulate them. That includes the board of director elections for the Sitnasauk Native Corporation in Nome. It falls to the Division of Banking and Securities. The justices heard from Assistant Attorney General Robert Schmidt that Native corporations are keeping regulators busy.
Of all the division's enforcement areas, banks, financial institutions, securities, the division spends more time on ANCSA solicitation enforcement than any other program area.
The case was brought by the American Civil Liberties Union to test the limits of the state's power to regulate shareholder speech. Orlansky argued the division's requirement for disclosure filings in advance of any statement that could sway elections is much too broad.
And that gets the division into regulating all sorts of political speech, dissident speech, what's wrong with this corporation, as well as favorable speech.
The justices seized on this point. Justice Daniel Winfrey quizzed Schmidt. He posed a hypothetical question.
If you wrote nothing other than, it's time for everybody to come to the shareholder meeting instead of voting by proxy, don't execute proxies, come to the meeting and vote, that's a violation of law.
Yes, Your Honor.
The attorney clarified that it would trigger the need for the shareholder to first file with the state.
If you don't register, it's a violation of law.
Yes.
Isn't that a little much?
At one point, Chief Justice Joe Bolger turned it around. He says state regulations over corporate speech also ensures native corporations don't put out false information and dupe shareholders.
If we do as you say, aren't we opening a loophole that will be a loophole not only for the weak, but also for the mighty?
Well, I think that maybe the answer goes...
Orlansky told Bolger the state could model its rules after the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission, which regulates publicly traded corporations. The SEC has loosened restrictions on the speech of shareholders who are not running for office, but it kept the regulations in place for the corporation itself.
And so that, I think, is part of the answer, is that there is, this may not necessarily need to be a scheme that is even-handed.
The justices said a written decision would be forthcoming. They didn't indicate when. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Dave Dalton has run more Yukon Quests than anyone else, and the Healy Musher is preparing to run his 30th and what he says will be his last trip along the 1,000-mile trail between Fairbanks and Whitehorse. KUAC's Lex Trinan reports.
At his kennel just outside of Healy, 62-year-old musher Dave Dalton recalls the two times during his nearly 30-year career running the Yukon Quest in which he thought he'd never come back. The first time was after his very first year, back in 1988. The second time was last year, when he got stuck by himself in a storm going over Rosebud Summit.
I just couldn't see the trail markers, so I just had to, because the gusts were going up between 60, 70 miles an hour. So I just had to pull over and hunker down so the gusts settled down a little bit and just look for the next trail marker and then go from trail marker to trail marker.
Dalton finished last year's race in a tough field in 15th. Not bad considering the Rosebud ascent, but he said at the finish, his knees were aching, he was tired, and he saw his chance of achieving the big 3-0 fading from his eyes. A few days went by and his body still ached. The days rolled into weeks, the weeks into months. It wasn't until July, on top of sun-soaked glacier outside of Juneau, where Dalton works as a guide for a mushing service during the summer, that he decided that his body and his mind had finally recovered. It was a sort of therapy session where he was standing while his therapist sat in the sled.
Lots of clients, lots of tourists, and that helped too, talking about the race to the guests we have and the clients, and seeing how amazing that race is and all that, and it just gets you psyched even more to come back for the 30s.
Good conditions and nice cold weather this winter too have helped him find a place where he feels that, although he's not quite at the physical level he was in his younger years, he thinks that he and his team will be able to finish with heads held high and tails wagging. He says he hopes to be involved organizationally with the race in the future, but insists that this year will be his final race.
I will not be coming back. This is it.
100%?
100% sure.
Afterwards, he says he'll find homes for his dogs, every last one, and do something that he's never had a chance to do.
Do some traveling, not worrying about babysitters.
He says he's likely headed south.
I haven't been to Hawaii yet.
In Fairbanks, I'm Lex Trinan.
And I'm Dan Bross.